Good morning. Good morning. All right, so if you have, there should be some handouts. Are there handouts anywhere? Do we have any? There might be in the drawer, the cabinet. Look, yep. Is that one?
Two.
Okay. All right. Fine. Fine. We're going to share. We're going to be wise with our resources. Distribute them. So we've been talking about money and marriage. And I think we're around page 4, bottom of page 4. So we're going to look at a couple of case studies to start out with. And we'll kind of get to the scriptural principles as we kind of read through these. So case study number 2, Chris and Jennifer. Cole, do you have this one? Can you read through Chris and Jennifer there?
Chris and Jennifer both agree that they should live within their means. Jennifer meticulously records every expense in a spreadsheet with monthly amounts budgeted for different categories. Chris says he always checks the account balances before making any large purchases, but sometimes forgets to give Jennifer all the receipts. This makes it very difficult for Jennifer to keep them within their budget.
Okay, so let's think about Jennifer and Chris. They have a little bit of, right, they're trying to work through things. What is there any advice you would give to Jennifer if she came, if she's frustrated or working through trying to budget with Chris? Some things I might tell her. Or is it, is she fine? It's all right. Gentle reminder?
Yeah. Online banking might be a solution.
Mm-hmm. So she could see, right, what's being spent.
Online.
Yeah, doesn't have to ask.
Yeah.
Excellent, excellent. Same thing for Chris, right?
Just yeah, I think part of it is, like, so how often are we talking about, like, one receipt is missing a month, or is he just not giving her receipts at all? He's not keeping receipts. So I think part of it is just how big is this deal?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then I think there's there might be some other solutions like confiscating his wallet and just taking the receipts out. That's going to have happened in my house.
Yeah.
Which is fine. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So yeah. I think there's a difference between forgetfulness and hiding.
Yeah.
And so I think if it's something where he is clearly hiding, mm-hmm. and she finds bags of McDonald's with the receipts in the trash, you know, outside the home, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Then I think that's a different issue from occasional forgetfulness.
And are the receipts just forgotten, or are they expenditures that they wouldn't maybe agree upon?
Right. Yeah.
Otherwise.
Those are the ones that are convenient.
And those are the ones that are lost. Oh, what's this? Oh, that is a power tool that I bought. Whatever.
We've been kind of talking about similar things, and in the opposite direction of online banking, have been considering using the cash only method.
Oh.
That way, you don't have to keep track of everything.
You just look in the envelope.
Divvied out.
Very 1970s, 80s. Yeah.
That seems weird.
Cash envelope system. Yeah. Yeah, that's good. And like what you talked about, just communicating however you do it. Sometimes we've had times where, you know, where we used to store all the receipts and, oh, I look in the person. Okay, this is my stack of receipts. And, mm-hmm. Right? You just go through them all. And timeliness too, right? It's kind of the more often they talk about it will help, right? That's not 2 months and they go back and there's a huge pile.
Well, and I'm thinking about it as like a joint effort, because that last sentence says this makes it very difficult for Jennifer to keep them within their budget. And it's not just her job.
Right.
They need to be doing it together.
Yeah. So how invested is Chris in like keeping the budget no matter what it is, his part?
And maybe she's the one that you know, puts it in or, you know, has that role, but it's still a joint effort.
Mm-hmm.
She's the one that mainly keeps the books.
Yeah, so maybe what could Chris do to help might be we say, hey, Chris, you should be taking this initiative to make sure that all your expenditures are known.
Yeah, and I think presumably they both agreed on this system.
Mm-hmm.
if you both agree on this system, then you don't delegate a job to somebody and then make it difficult for them to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's just kind of exasperating.
Yeah, I think one thing I would tell, so if it's continually not working month after month, then change the system, right? Find something that works for you and your wife and for you and your husband. And we've tried different things, like you say, and like sometimes you find out, well, this particular thing isn't working really well. One thing with the online banking is I used to get all of the expenditures from this individual receipts and go through them all and look for the date, and now I just look at the online and it makes it simpler to.
Yeah, one thing with this system that is advantageous is you catch credit card fraud. So in our marriage, probably once a year, would you say, there's a receipt that
mm-hmm.
makes no sense,
mm-hmm.
we don't have anything to match it, and we basically catch credit card fraud.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's a big one. I mean, that's more 2000 and on. It's more and more a huge issue.
I think anytime there's an issue like this, if a woman's talking to me about something about her husband, the question I always ask is, did he sin against you?
Mm-hmm.
Because how we deal with this is completely different if he sinned against you versus this is a preference issue or this is a wisdom issue. Or so if you look at something like this, I mean, unless he's sneaking
mm-hmm.
and hiding something, then the answer to that question is no. And so what you want to do is you want to make sure that Jennifer is not getting embittered
mm-hmm.
and, you know, communication is good. And that's when you can talk, like, strategy
mm-hmm.
as opposed to, like,
heart and
heart,
sin.
Morals,
mm-hmm.
you know,
yep.
those sorts of things. So I think just clearly putting this in the category it belongs in
mm-hmm.
will help you to deal with the issue.
That's good. Let's talk about Matt and Ashley, okay? All right. So Matt and Ashley believe in working hard for a living. Both have full-time jobs. Both of their kids are in high school and have part-time jobs. Matt and Ashley manage their own separate bank accounts. They split all the bills 50-50, including giving to the church. Apart from paying the bills, Matt and Ashley talk little about money and trust each other's judgment. Okay, I've got lots of stuff to go on here, lots of discussion points. Do you see pros and cons, any pros or cons that you see of their arrangement? Because this is kind of it's a less common one, but happens. Let's start with the cons, maybe. That's probably more obvious. What would be the downside of their system?
They're basically roommates. They're not working together at all.
Okay.
No one ever agrees on which bills should be split 50-50. I mean, just in reality.
Right? Like, well, that's your
yeah.
That's
yeah.
your bill.
I'll get the steak and the appetizers and dessert. She gets the salad. But let's split it 50-50.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. That's good. What about talking a little about money and trusting each other's judgment?
It's great until somebody has a lapse of judgment.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
And then there's no accountability.
Yeah. And is there any kind of suspicion in terms of like what could be going on at a heart level or at a marriage level that this might be a sign of? Yes, yes.
Oh, yeah.
Well, when you're working independently of each other, it just makes it, I would say, easier in a way to
yep.
split.
Mm-hmm.
You're not relying on each other.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't have to share.
Mm-hmm. It's like, if I want something, I just buy it. This is out of
my
money.
Money.
Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead.
But they both share responsibility. Like it sounds like they're both responsible for themselves,
mm-hmm.
which is probably kind of nice in some ways, like a small pro.
Yeah, and so let's say we give them the benefit in that they split every single bill. Every restaurant, every utility, everything that is bought, like 50-50. But like you said, then what's the point of having your own money? So again, what the kind of question is that area, like if you are splitting everything 50-50, why do you need separate,
yeah.
right? And right. if we want these separate accounts, then there's a sense in which we want to have some sort of individuality, right, among the marriage, within the marriage. And like you said, there's a tendency to want to split, And like technically, I mean, it could work, but again, it sets up this structure where we are two separate entities versus we are one entity as a whole.
I think it depends a lot on what their attitude is towards it too. Mm-hmm. You know, if Ashley's looking at it's my money, and maybe mm-hmm. she's got $15,000 in there, and let's say something happens to Matt, and she's not willing to use that money for him
exactly.
because it's my money. That's
yeah.
a whole lot, you know, because David and I both have different businesses that
yeah.
we do, and so we mm-hmm. have multiple checking accounts, and we have specific checking accounts for our businesses.
Mm-hmm.
But we're both on the checking account,
mm-hmm.
and we're not, that might be money that he earned selling cattle.
Mm-hmm.
Overall, it's still our money.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a different heart attitude of like,
mm-hmm.
well, yeah, this is my, you know, I earned
mm-hmm.
this. But overall, if I needed something with that money, I could use
yeah.
it. Whereas we don't necessarily have that with Matt and Ashley on what their
yeah.
thought process is on that, because they
yeah.
well could be like, well, no, this is my money that I saved.
Yeah.
And I'm going to go make this huge purchase without even talking to you because mm-hmm. I've saved all this money.
Yeah.
So.
And it brings it, you bring up a really good point, which kind of makes things a little bit more tricky, is that kind of in this scenario, both they have a job, right? And they're in, it's very clear, this is my income. So when you're a business owner, or if you and your spouse each have their own businesses, that's like, there's the business, right, resources and the personal, and you make distributions to yourself. And so it makes it a lot more difficult. And there's the communication is like, it is the business bought this new truck for the business, right? So
yeah.
it can be
and
tricky.
I mean, on a pro, like we've definitely seen cases where a couple will, she has some source of income and that's her play money.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way that they eliminate friction over
mm-hmm.
her clothes,
yeah.
her shopping habits, for her grandkids or whatever it is.
Right.
And sometimes that's just a way of living together peaceably.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, so again, we don't know
yeah.
exactly their
yeah.
heart.
Yeah. And how to manage, right? It makes it, it's just becomes a lot more, you need a lot more communication if you, the more sources of income that you have and how those income, how that's accrued, okay? So it's a little bit more clear cut if you have one or two sources that just go into one spot.
Yeah, I think the other thing too is shared bank accounts and equal access to all accounts gives you accountability.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen a number of cases where one of the parties has a secret bank account
mm-hmm.
that they use to finance their sin.
Mm-hmm.
And the other person has no idea about it. And yeah, that's.
Yeah, I think one of the first Sundays I gave a couple statistics from a recent study where after infidelity, you know, finances were the number two cause for divorce that's listed.
Mm-hmm.
And out of those, a very large percentage listed that their spouse had hidden purchases
mm-hmm.
from the other. And so it was a huge
yeah.
point of conflict and it caused, many times it caused for split. So yeah, having everybody's access, and that's one of the, you know, we're in the downside with a lot of the identity theft and the credit card theft, but one of the good sides of having access to both account, or all your accounts, both spouses can do that
mm-hmm.
if you've used the online banking. But somehow, both having access to those accounts, both having your names on the accounts.
I see it a lot of time at my job. I work in the motor vehicle department.
Mm-hmm.
And so I see a lot of times one spouse will come in and not want to put the other spouse on their vehicle. Because
mm-hmm.
it's my car. I don't want them on there. And I'm always just like, what? It just like baffles me. I'm like,
mm-hmm.
but it's actually safer. But it's just very interesting, the attitudes and the different people,
mm-hmm.
How they say it and what they say and the way that they say it. It's always very interesting to me to see that dynamic
mm-hmm.
And how it can very easily... It blurs the line of like, okay, well, if your finances aren't shared, then there's a lot of other things
yeah.
that may not be being shared. So on the surface level, it
mm-hmm.
doesn't necessarily look like, oh, well, there's not any problems with that.
Yeah.
But then when you actually dig down to the unity of the marriage and other things, it actually can be an indication of
yeah.
a lot of other problems.
Yeah.
And something as small as, no, I don't want their name on my vehicle
mm-hmm.
also.
Very good. Yes. Okay. All right, so let's move on. Let's look at point, or letter E, on page 5. So we've talked about a lot of principles in terms of management, how we should manage the money that God's given us, not getting rich quick and working hard. So now we have giving to the Lord. So Proverbs 14:31 and 1 Timothy 5:8. So Jason, you want to read Proverbs 14:31?
Yeah. Whoever oppresses a poor man insults his maker, but he who is generous to the needy honors him.
Okay. And then Noah, can you get 1 Timothy 5:18?
Let the elders who rule well be considered worthy of double honor, especially those who labor in preaching and teaching. For the scripture says, you shall not muzzle an ox when it treads the grain, and the laborer deserves his wages.
Okay. So we're talking about being generous to the needy, but also giving to those who labor in preaching, right? And those who are laboring in teaching. So we're thinking about the church. We're thinking about those who are in need. So what do you notice about generous people? When someone's generous, what does that say about their character? What does it say about them? They're a generous giver.
Usually they can see what other people need and they're not as focused on their own.
Yeah.
Totally consumed.
They're aware of others' needs.
Yeah.
And they care about others' needs.
It's an aspect of love.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just, I'm not just planning the next vacation, but I'm actually planning how I can love and bless somebody
mm-hmm.
other than me.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that one thing I noticed about, like you said, with generosity is that especially in kind of a more prosperous first world nation, we're a lot of times planning, a lot of our planning is what do we do with our leisure discretionary. It's not just our rent and our food and our necessities. It's how am I going to spend this extra hundreds, thousands, whatever that might be. And a generous person is thinking about how they can give to this or that need or how they can give more. Whereas the opposite might be just growing. This is kind of one critique I have. I used to listen to Larry Burkett back in the late 90s. He did a financial ministry on the radio and passed away from cancer. And then there's Dave Ramsey. And one of the differences that I've noticed is that Burkett seemed to focus more on stewardship and using the money to grow God's kingdom. And Ramsey will say that he's geared his speech more towards the total audience, not just the church. And so he often talks about building wealth and then throws in so that you can give more and do these things. But that's one kind of a caution I would give is that sometimes if I've modeled our finances after Ramsey, the push is building the wealth and the giving is brought in secondary a lot of times or at the end or
mm-hmm.
not at all. And where oftentimes God may not call all of us to be wealthy, and so he might call us to be more sacrificial. So it's not quite a total picture. So when we think about giving, it reminds us that our goal and our purpose of managing our money is not just to grow it to our own,
yeah.
right? To always manage more.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you think you know, God feels insulted when a poor man is oppressed? So let's read James 1:27. Let's go to James 1. Religion that is pure and undefiled before God the Father is this, to visit orphans and widows in their affliction and to keep oneself unstained from the world. So it kind of relates back to what we talked about, like what's going on when we have people in poverty or the widow, the orphan, and we're not providing for them.
Yeah, I think it's important to recognize that widows and orphans are not poor because they're addicted to meth. You know, they are poor because the curse has taken away their, you know, the men and their
mm-hmm.
life in that case.
Mm-hmm.
And so compassion towards them is really trying to relieve, you know, suffering and show them
mm-hmm.
grace and kindness because they are vulnerable and they are,
mm-hmm.
Just that's the way that the
mm-hmm.
Lord has compassion on them
yeah.
is by using people to provide for them and to be a father to the fatherless. And,
Well, I think it's like the guy who was given much and or was forgiven of his debt and then went and threw the guy in prison because
mm-hmm.
this isn't your money anyways.
Mm-hmm.
And the Lord has given it to you, so you should be giving it
mm-hmm.
to others.
Mm-hmm. So what are some practical ways or what are some things that we need to think about when we're being generous? And think specifically we're thinking about, you know, Proverbs 14:31, whoever oppresses a poor man insults his maker, but he who's generous to the needy. How can we actually do that? How can we show compassion and be generous to the needy? Because I don't know, but it seems like there's an attitude sometimes that everybody's asking for, you know, everybody wants a handout, and sometimes in this, you know, you should work harder and like being wise, you know, not just, I think there's two extremes where we just, I'm gonna be generous. So everyone that asks of me, no matter what the situation or circumstances, I'm gonna give. And then there's the jaded, this person isn't really in need, you know, they need to work hard. So what are some practical ways that you guys decide on how you give, where you give, what do you give to?
I think one way, let's say, you have a bunch of women want to get together for lunch after Bible study, and they want to invite someone to come along, but this one woman knows, I just can't afford to do that, we're on
mm-hmm.
a super tight budget.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's something to be said, says, you know, be my treat, come on, you know, where you use your money to just include them in a social circle so
mm-hmm.
they don't feel marginalized
mm-hmm.
Because of some of, you know, just where they are with life.
Yeah.
And not allowing like a two-tier, you know what I'm saying, like a two-tier social.
Like the ones that can afford it, we're gonna go out.
Yeah, and the ones who can't, cannot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so
mm-hmm.
basically using your money to try to include people into the
mm-hmm.
overall social circle.
Yeah. That could be for social events, it could be
yeah.
school-related things,
yeah, and that's
all
what
kinds
you see
of
in 1 Corinthians chapter 11, where there's a stratification
mm-hmm.
where the rich people would just kind of gorge and feast as the poor people would just watch on
mm-hmm.
during these church
yeah.
suppers that they had.
And what would you guys say? Why would that maybe be better than, or maybe it's not, but why would that be maybe better than donating to a national organization that then distributes that money to?
Yeah.
Do you see what, like, what's the advantage of the direct? You know the person.
Yeah.
Well, there's so many advantages. When you have a relationship, there's potential for ongoing blessing,
mm-hmm.
Reciprocal blessing.
Mm-hmm.
And then just scripture, that's what it calls on us to do, is take care of the poor who are among us.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, starting with the church. And so, like, even with our kids and teaching them how to give, you know, we teach them to set aside a portion of everything they earn. And then our kids actually sponsor other kids for camp, right? It's
mm-hmm.
something they know where it's going. They have a vested interest in these
mm-hmm.
people. They know these kids' situations. You know, they do it secretly.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a way to kind of teach them, you take care of those who are among you first.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, it's not handing money to a guy in the corner, but
mm-hmm.
it's taking the person who you know just lost the provider of their household
mm-hmm.
or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's how we do
it. Yeah, and I mean, one real key principle, like you talked about, there's a relationship. And so whether that's overseas missions or giving to the orphans and the widows, giving to those who are near and among you or to those who are involved in ministry that you have a relationship with, you know, first of all, you know that where that money is going, how it's being spent, and you can see the effects, you can hear the effects either directly from the people that you're giving to or secondary from the person who's doing the administering as they kind of give reports back, or it's missions. And I think there's a huge, huge advantage to that relational aspect. If you and your family find people who are giving or who are in need and just making that direct, finding a way to provide for those needs. Any particular things or needs that you guys see around us that are good opportunities for that? So besides Dave's example.
I think probably a good example recently with
Mm-hmm.
of when they were coming home, and lots of things had to be organized,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
just the generosity within the church of people willing to go and sit with Courtney while she had
mm-hmm.
all the kids and Sharon and all that.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was just, that's a good indication of
yes.
of people's generosity, and everyone was super generous and wanted
yeah.
to be there and willing to donate items and whatever was needed
mm-hmm.
to help.
Yeah, I've seen a tremendous amount of generosity in terms of, you know, the giving to the church, giving to the building project, giving to the additional, the needs for the counseling center, all that are working towards ministry that you can see and be a part of.
Yeah.
And so there's a tremendous amount. And when we have, you know, when we have sponsored and have people come in and share about missions or overseas work, that relationship creates opportunities where
mm-hmm.
maybe it's not our whole church, but you go up and talk to them and say, you know, tell us more. And maybe it's in an area you want to invest in. Okay, I'm going to invest in that. So look for opportunities, and just many times if we pray and ask, you know, what are the needs of those around me, God will make it clear. You'll see lots of opportunities where you can give. Okay, what about how much money should you give? Let's go to 2 Corinthians. Chapter 9. And Paul is talking about, he's referring to this collection that the Corinthians gave to some brothers and to the church that was in need. And starting in verse 6, he says, "The point is this, whoever sows sparingly will also reap sparingly. And whoever sows bountifully will also reap bountifully. Each one must give as he has decided in his heart, not reluctantly or under compulsion, for God loves a cheerful giver." So what do we see from those verses? How should we give, or how much should we give? Daniel, what do you think?
Cheerfully with what is going to or because you have to, because God has called you to, but because you want to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Not out of compulsion,
right
is the word
yeah.
that you must, but what you cheerfully want to give.
Right.
Why do you think that is important? Why do you think he says, includes that, not reluctantly or under compulsion?
Honest, a lot of people.
Yeah. I mean, he could have said just give generously without
right.
including that.
That's true.
Right? Just give generously, whether you like it or not.
Yeah.
Be generous, even if you're being forced to.
Yeah.
Well, going back to, you know, having the right heart, if you will,
mm-hmm.
wanting to provide for those around you, wanting to
mm-hmm.
grow the kingdom of God, not just this is something I have to do because
mm-hmm.
I have to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Understanding more in depth of what it's going towards and why.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what do you think sometimes is going through a person's mind if they're giving reluctantly or if they feel compelled to give when they're giving?
What I could have gotten if I wouldn't have.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think sometimes too I've encountered the, you know, I expect, you know, we shouldn't have any problem with our finances because I've been doing my part and I've been giving what I have to give. I've been paying my God tax, or
mm-hmm.
in a sense. So there's this expectation that they expect something out of their money and they give. Yeah.
So we often think about, like, where do I want my heart to be, right?
Mm-hmm.
'Cause where your treasure is, there your heart will be.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we want our hearts to be with some of our friends who are overseas, then we need to start giving them our money, because
mm-hmm.
then we're going to start praying for them,
mm-hmm.
and then we're going to really care. I mean, so those are the sorts of questions that it doesn't make it about, like, do I want to buy a boat or do I want to give to these people? Well, I guess I should give these people. But, like, do I want my heart to be in a boat or in,
right.
you know, Turkey or whatever?
Yes. Yeah.
That's, like, literally where I was going.
That's great.
Yeah. Because then I think of any time that I felt reluctant in giving,
good thing or not. It's like, ooh, but why? What's wrong with the heart?
Mm-hmm.
Something needs corrected within me because I should be cheerful.
Mm-hmm.
So, and God's always after the heart.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think I heard it said if God doesn't want your money, he has your heart.
Mm-hmm.
But if he has your heart, he has your money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think about that when he says not reluctantly or under compulsion, almost it almost says to me that message, that the giving is for your sake,
mm-hmm.
and for the sake of your, it's not for God's need of our money.
Yeah.
So we never give because God needs our resources. It's a beneficial way that he uses that giving of our resources to, like you said, unite us or have us invested or have us participating with and growing in a ministry.
Yeah.
Or a need.
I think, I mean, when we get to heaven, I think there's going to be just like this profound satisfaction that we will experience when we get there about, you know, how the Lord used
mm-hmm.
our money. I don't know what that looks like.
Mm-hmm.
Doing too.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure we're going to have like a special bank account. But, I mean, there is treasure in heaven, and that's where our heart will be. But I think there's just going to be a point in time when we're just, it's kind of like the retiree, right, who saved, and then they reach retirement age, and they're like, man, I'm sure glad I saved. I think you take that and multiply that by a billion.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's the experience that we're going to have in heaven. It's like, man, I'm sure glad, you know, the Lord allowed me to give this much.
It reminds me, I can't remember like in, find it. I don't want to misquote it here. Yeah, it's not the same. It's not really in the context of giving, but I mean, when Paul talks about building upon the gospel, he talks about the idea that each one's work, you know, if anyone builds on gold, silver, precious stones, wood, or hay, it will become manifest. They'll disclose it. It'll be revealed by fire. So there's that sense in which everything we invest in, it'll be exposed as to whether or not it was worthwhile in terms of ministry. But
I like the idea of that word stewardship. We are stewards of his resources. If we've been gifted salvation, if we've been gifted these things that we can use,
mm-hmm.
we're not really, when you're cheerfully giving,
mm-hmm.
you're returning it to the person that gave you the gift,
mm-hmm.
and that is the, I think, just the holistic mindset behind it,
mm-hmm.
as what did I do to deserve this, you know, I've been put here, came along, walked the steps that I've walked, and then everything just kind of happens for those, I'm not articulating this very well, but that's where my mind drifts when I think about
the stewardship.
Yeah,
yeah, and I think that's one of those, that key things, like you said, is when you are giving, there's an idea that you will give an account for that, for what
yeah.
you're stewarding. And oftentimes when we give to needs, right, is God going to be more pleased with giving to this ministry or choosing this purchase? So let's look at Dan and Sarah. Okay, Dan and Sarah. So Dan and Sarah are barely getting by. They work middle to low income jobs. Some months they make enough to save a little bit or splurge on something nice. Other months they don't have enough to pay the bills. They do rely on credit cards and are getting deeper in debt with each bad month or unexpected expense. Dan believes they should try tithing and says if we give to God, he will bless us tenfold. Sarah would also like to give, but only in the good months, giving whatever extra money they have. Okay, so imagine we've got Dan and Sarah. Maybe they've just come and you've speaking with them at church. As you get to know them, how would you counsel them? What would you say to Dan about how to approach? Lauren has some ideas. What do you think?
I think with Dan, you have to be careful that, well, I gave this God, so now where's mine?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's not a, yeah.
Yeah.
I'd be really careful about it.
Yeah.
They splurge a little bit?
Sometimes, when they can.
Why isn't that going towards your credit card debt?
So maybe talk to them about their splurging.
Well, and like, do they really, when they're really barely getting by, what are they spending their money on?
Mm-hmm.
Do they have a budget?
Mm-hmm.
Do they have,
mm-hmm.
it kind of seems, Dan believes they should try tithing kind of as like, oh, maybe this will work. Maybe if I
mm-hmm.
give money, then God will give it back to me, instead of what are the facts? And
mm-hmm.
yeah,
mm-hmm.
work it into your budget and give money. What, you know, what are they spending their money on that they're barely getting by?
Mm-hmm.
Are they eating out every night, or
yeah.
where's their money going?
Yeah.
And are they really just barely getting by,
mm-hmm.
or are they just not using their money wisely?
So,
kids?
I don't know. Doesn't say. Both you guys mentioned like where, what are they doing with their, how, right? So one question would be asking them, do you know where your money is being spent? And you can right talk about a budget. And so there's the practicality, and then there's like just the attitude you said, that Jason, right? You got to address them that it's not a reciprocal, if I give this much and God gives it right back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's kind of a couple things. Dan's attitude, he's not giving, he's buying.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And secondly, when you kind of approach money as a, you're always trying to get rich quick,
mm-hmm.
instead of just doing the hard work of self-discipline and savings.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the, you know, all people who try to get rich quick, they try to do it without self-discipline.
Mm-hmm.
And they want to, you know, gain easily. And even if you gain money, you're going to lose it easily because you don't have the self-discipline
mm-hmm.
that comes with it.
Yeah.
And that's why, you know, that's why to really build wealth, if you don't have
mm-hmm.
the self-discipline to go with it.
Yeah.
And the character to come along with it, it's going to be a corrupting influence. That's
yeah.
why winning the lottery is such a
mm-hmm.
catastrophic event for so many people,
mm-hmm.
is to gain it without self-discipline.
Yeah.
I'm kind of curious, too, why they continually have bad months. Like, I mean, I know sometimes there's unexpected expenses, and I mean, we've experienced those as well, but most of them are expected, unexpected expenses. You know, like, expect an ER trip, expect something to break, you
mm-hmm.
know, like,
right, it's like you have little kids, you know, you know somebody's gonna go to the hospital at some point.
But if they're continually having them, you wonder what is causing them to continually have them.
Yeah, our furnace is 30 years old, but we pray over it every day.
I lay my hands on
them. Lay my hands on them. Not when it's super hot, but. Yeah.
But like on the other hand, if you don't give at the beginning of the month.
The first fruits.
Yeah.
You like will literally never have like, oh, we had another bad month.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly.
So he has, if his mentality is like God will bless us in the future, or you know, not physically bless us, but like there will be a reward by giving,
mm-hmm.
then that's the right idea to like give first, and then you won't have money for like splurging on things.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes you have to like remove that.
Yeah.
The blessing is trusting in God. But yeah. Probably will never have a good one.
And I've seen people who kind of made that, you know, they weren't giving.
Mm-hmm.
And their wealth wasn't growing. Then they started giving. And next thing you know, their business took off.
Mm-hmm.
They got the promotion or whatever. I mean, sometimes it is.
Mm-hmm.
A step of faith. I say that carefully.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you're going to be stingy with your money, why would God be generous with you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think a lot of the questions kind of point just towards a lot of you guys are talking about. It seems like they just don't have a clue on like just being a steward of where the money is going. And yes?
Well, I was going to ask him, because he specifically used the word tithing, which to me makes me think well,
yeah.
he's immediately thinking 10%.
Right.
Which might be a good rule of thumb, but
Yeah, so that'd be a good lead in to have some discussion, because it makes you question, where is he getting the idea of tithing and tenfold and those type of things, right? Is there some sort of deeper heart, and how is he reading scriptures, how is he understanding, that might be helpful for them to do some Bible study.
If somebody was addressing a heart issue, would that, is 10% like if you're talking to somebody who's asking these questions for whatever reason, is 10% still, you know, because that's where you're going with that.
Right. Yeah, so I think
you address what he said, tithing and 10% and saying,
yeah, that's it.
You do want to start at the beginning of your budget and give first, because jumping off point. I don't know how you would answer that question if he asked.
Well, I think that third question kind of gets at what you're asking. Like, how should they decide what to give to the church, right? Does it need to be 10%? Should it be more than 10%? How do they make that call? And so, like you said, you know, that tithing was kind of a principle that was, you know, in the nation of Israel, and they had all kinds of different tithes and giving and different expectations that we don't have, right? But we're told to give to the Lord and to do it generously. And so there's a little bit of freedom there in terms of deciding how much. And, you know, like, you, if you've got different businesses, it may not be the same every month. It might be more at different times of the year. But I think the key principles are they should do it consistently. They should give consistently to the Lord of what they're making. And they should seek to do it generously, right, as they've decided in their heart, not under compulsion or reluctantly, right? Those are our, and when we think about that more in context, we know that in the scriptures, in 1 Timothy, you know, let the elders who rule well be considered worthy of double honor, especially those who labor in preaching and teaching. So the idea is we should be giving enough to provide for the ministries that we want to see and that God has called for the preaching and teaching of the gospel. And when we've had the building project, or when we've had the counseling, to talk and explain, this is the ministry that's going to be taking place using these resources and funds. And so our giving should be kind of in line with trying to provide as much as we can. Anything to go along with that?
They could give to their time and service instead of monetary.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, so before we go, let's look at some further wisdom. So we've got a few stewardship points here. This is from Jim Rickard, and President of Stewardship Services Foundation. So we'll hit these and see if we have any comments or put on here. But these are just some tips and principles, right? Some things that you may or may not think about. But give God a chance first. So instead of buying it, ask God to provide it. And so God may provide something for you through your purchasing it, but he might provide it to you through some other way. Learn to save money, right? Spending less than you earn, those go together. Don't finance, right, or borrow money for pleasure items, right? Use cash for those, or money that you have. Have cash in an emergency fund. So lots of people, right, like you said, have planned emergencies, planned money that's just set aside for emergencies, so that when we know something goes wrong, going to draw from that. Control your credit cards, which means different things to different people. Have adequate life insurance. And we're going to talk about that when we get into things like retirement life insurance. How is that a way of scripturally loving and providing for your family? So we've got life insurance, being self-insured for life insurance by your retirement age or 65. Have a plan in progress happening at least by 40. Own your own home by 65 or retirement. Have a workable budget and be able to exercise discipline and control in the use of that budget, right? That's the budget's worthless if we can't have self-control and discipline ourselves to keep it. Think about and know the difference between debt and obligations. Understand the tax law as it applies to you. And have an estate plan that includes a will or a living trust. So I was sharing with Carissa, one of these stands out to me, the have a retirement plan in place by age 40. I was talking about exponential growth in my college algebra class, and I had a student who he just got a scholarship. He's a first generation college student, and his parents, I think, made it through sophomore year in middle school and in their education, and he's going to a 4-year university. And he was just really paying attention. We were talking about retirement, and so he came in and, after graduation, and you know, can you share that spreadsheet with me? Can you explain how does this work? And just questions like, well, where do I go? Where do I put this money? Who, you know, very basic questions. But he was interested in learning, you know, what's a financial plan? You know, like, what is retirement? How does this work? You know, is this money guaranteed? You know, all those types of questions that, and just to help get the idea across that starting, one thing he really understood from that day was the earlier you start, right, the better off you're going to be, no matter what. I said, that's the most I can tell you. All the rest of the stuff I'm going to refer you to. But out of these 14, any of these particular ones, like, really stand out to you, or maybe you have a question about that you're thinking, I don't know, what do you mean by that?
I don't understand 12. Debt and obligations, what is that?
So you can chime in here too as well, but for me, when I think about debt and obligations, so there's certain types. One clear difference is there's like consumer debt, where oftentimes you borrow money for eating out and for, you know, entertainment and leisure and pleasure, where it's just, it disappears. Whereas you may have a mortgage, which is an investment in an asset that's appreciating.
Okay, so,
and so
that would be an
both obligation. Of those are borrowed money, but one is appreciating and gaining value, and one is just, it's gone. Can you add anything to that? Or?
Money invested in your business.
Yeah, like where it's like, it, and that's like an asset versus a liability, or you're investing in it, but it's something that's growing, it's something that's appreciating.
Just out of curiosity, how would you personally categorize student debt, student loans?
Oh, man.
Debt or obligation?
That's a good question. That's a good question.
It's an obligation. Mm-hmm. I mean, depending on what you go, if you go into $100,000 of debt for a cosmetology school,
yeah.
That's just debt.
But $100,000 into law school,
yeah.
You've increased your earning power over the course of your life.
Mm-hmm. There's a bit of calculation involved in terms of the job outlook.
Because some of these schools are frankly scams.
Yes.
The ones you see advertised on daytime TV.
Yeah. Like, I would say I can think of two specific examples, friends, that I had where one borrowed the maximum student loan every year, got a psychology degree, and went into ministry. And so it, like, really didn't benefit that particular person. Another one, you know, borrowed the minimum he needed to, but accrued quite a bit going to medical school, and he's, you know, optometrist, and now owns his own, you know, practice. Whereas he borrowed a lot more, but in the long run, it was paid for and is doing very well now. So it often depends on, you know, what is that money invested in? The business. That's another, there's lots of specific questions. You usually don't want to buy everything first before you get your business going, right? Grow a little bit at a time, right? Making sure you have money coming in and slowly improve it, slowly grow it, right? Instead of, I'm going to take out $1 million loan to start this business that I haven't sold anything.
Yeah, I'd say tax law as well. If I'm sitting down with an accountant, I mean, so many businesses go under because they forget to pay the Social Security tax, mm-hmm. or
sales,
like
tax,
sales tax. Mm-hmm. And just understanding that, or you might miss out on an opportunity to save a bunch of money, or even to qualify for certain programs that can really benefit your kids.
Yeah, that's something I think particularly we talked about. Chris and I sometimes put our house on Airbnb, and it's something that for, like, in Emporia, when they have the big events like the bike ride and so there's a tax law that your residence can be rented out up to 14 days a year, and that income is untaxed. So that's something that's, we don't want to do it for 15 days. Right? So just simple things like that can make, you know, can make a significant difference, being aware of those. And then having an estate plan, I remember 3 or 4 years ago, I think, whenever it was, last time I talked through this, I was like, I hadn't got my, we hadn't got our wills done. So since then, we got our wills all written, and it wasn't too bad of a thing, you know, but it just took a little time. It's super helpful to, I mean, because like if you have, especially if you have kids, it's just super important. Like, what if both of us die? That was kind of the big, it seems pretty straightforward if one person were to die, but where are they going to go, and what do you do with your assets, and does whoever's taking your kids, do they take the assets right away? Do you put them in a trust for your kids? How are they going to be divided? And the key thing is not that there's a certain right way to do it, but that it's caring and loving for the people who you leave behind, because you've already answered those questions, and they don't have to try and guess what you would have wanted and think about feeling guilty about, is this really what they would have wanted? So I won't do a poll with having a will, but you guys need to have an estate plan, have your will. Okay, well, let's stop there, and we'll start with special issues next time. You guys can be thinking about retirement and going into debt, working outside the home. So we'll probably finish up that next week. So I'll pray for us, and we will move on with our worship. Father, it's been a great joy to share and talk about how to be good stewards of what you've given us. And I pray that each one of us would continually be giving up and using and putting your money where you want it to be invested, and in the lives of those who are in need, in the ministries that are sharing the gospel and growing your kingdom. And help us to know how to manage and steward our money and your money in a way that brings glory to you, that serves the body, that serves the world, and that helps your kingdom to continually grow. And help us to always have open hands with our money, that our hearts are in heaven and in you, and not tied up with the things of this world. I pray that you'd help us to have our hearts and minds focused on you and your glory as we continue this morning. In Jesus' name.